Welcome to today's reading of the Midland Reporter-Telegram and the Odessa American, read by volunteers and staff. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand at recordinglibrary.org.
This is Dave, and I'm reading from the Midland Reporter-Telegram, Monday, March 30th, 2020. This is Section A. The front page headline reads, "Virus cases in Midland rise by 12 in a week." Number in county still well below Lubbock's 41, behind 24 other counties statewide, by Stuart Doreen. This time last week, there was one confirmed case of coronavirus. How things have changed. City of Midland officials reported the 12th and 13th cases of coronavirus, the 12th in 6 days, in Midland County on Sunday. The 12th confirmed case is a male in his 20s. The source of exposure is to a known case, a press release from the city stated. The 13th confirmed case is a male in his 20s. The source of exposure is related to travel within the United States, stated a press release sent 2 hours later. Confirmed case number 12 is an outpatient, and self-quarantine is taking place at home, according to the release. Confirmed case number 13 was tested by a private provider and is self-isolating at home. The source of exposure is related to travel within the United States. The 13 cases in Midland County are more than comparable to counties across the region. In Taylor County, Abilene resides, there were 7 cases as of Saturday evening. There were 3 in Tom Green County, San Angelo, and 3 in Ector County, Odessa. City of Odessa officials reported 4 new cases on Sunday, the 3rd and 4th in 3 days. Medical Center Hospital President and CEO Russell Tippin announced at a Facebook Live press conference Sunday that a 58-year-old male and a 55-year-old female tested positive for COVID-19. They had been at Medical Center Hospital for the last 3 days and remain in isolation. The hospital has tested 39 people, Tippin said. 14 are pending approval from the health department to go up to the state. 11 are waiting on results. Earlier in the day, the city of Odessa reported a husband and wife in their 60s tested positive. The source of their exposure is currently unknown, according to the press release from the city. The man is currently at the hospital in Odessa, and the woman is self-isolating at home. Odessa Mayor David Turner stated Sunday in a Facebook Live post that he will issue an order that puts stricter measures in place in Odessa, a modified shelter in place. He has previously said this weekend that his mother has been tested for COVID-19. Turner also said he has not been exposed to the virus. "I have not been within 10 feet of her, and I've worn an N95 mask and protective gear when I have been around her," Turner said. "I have not put anyone in any danger of exposure to COVID-19. I understand the severity of the public health crisis we are currently in, and I want all of you to be assured the safety and well-being of my family, my staff, and the city of Odessa are of the utmost importance to me." Midland Mayor Patrick Payton again stated Sunday in an email to the Reporter-Telegram there will not be any proposed changes from him unless the City Council makes a change at its special meeting on Tuesday. Texas Department of State Health Services reports that Midland's 13 confirmed cases would tie for 25th among counties statewide as of the number reported by 8 p.m. Saturday. 8 counties have more than 100 confirmed cases. Midland also has more than one-third of the cases of Lubbock County, which has 41, according to DSHS. 4 other counties closer to Midland-Odessa with confirmed cases include Martin, Crane, Gaines, and Dawson, which have 1 each. This article is entitled "Payton, No Need to Move from Governor's Orders," by Stuart Doreen. The Midland City Council will have a special meeting Tuesday to discuss the status of the current declaration of disaster. But for Midland Mayor Patrick Payton, he hasn't seen any information that caused him to think there's a need to meet. Still, city leaders will talk about the declaration. Governor Greg Abbott's executive orders and whether to move forward in a different direction. Shelter-in-place orders might be discussed, similar to last week's meeting, but the mayor has been vocal about exceptions he's seen in many orders in cities across the state, and that there isn't much difference compared to what is currently in place in Midland. My main purpose on Tuesday is to get us together, see what information is we have Tuesday, and to see if we need to tighten anything up, Peyton said Friday. We will not loosen anything Tuesday. We'll just see if we need to tighten up anything. Abbott's executive order limits social gatherings to 10 people, prohibits eating and drinking at restaurants and bars, while still allowing takeout, closes gyms, bans people from nursing homes except for critical care, and temporarily closes schools. In this season of Lent, when we've been reflecting on sacrifice, we have to be willing to make these sacrifices over and over again, even if we don't like it, Peyton said. And I would also tell you, on your calendars, if you have April 4th marked as the big new Memorial Day holiday around here, where we're all going to go out into the community and we're going to see how close we can get to each other, you need to back off those plans. And we need to make sure we're ready to slow walk ourselves back into what normalcy is when we determine what normal is going to look like for us. Because there are a lot of things at play here with people's health and the people's economy. We have to keep taking care of one another and keep taking care of your neighbors. Last week, the number of Midland County residents with coronavirus reached 11. One of those, a man in his 60s, died Tuesday. This article is entitled, Report, Midland Post's Largest Rent Decrease in Nation, by Stuart Doreen. In March 2019, no community in the nation showed larger year-over-year rent increases than Midland, according to rentcafe.com. One year later, the 10 to 30% increases that drove average monthly rents in Midland to more than $1,600 a month are gone. Rent Cafe's blog shows Midland recorded a 10.3% decrease, the largest in the nation during the month of February. Midland also was only one of nine cities across the nation showing year-over-year declines. Midland's average rent continues the decline that started last summer. The $1,452 average in February was down from $1,490 in January. The website also reports the average rent has dropped $81 a month since October and $155 since June, when rent for the average apartment reached $1,607. Midland also gave up its number one ranking across the state. The Woodlands, located outside Houston, now has the top average rent, $1,468, according to Rent Cafe. Austin is the only other community with a monthly average of more than $1,400, $1,439. In Odessa, the average rent dropped 7% to $1,284 a month. Midland and Odessa were the only two communities in the nation with rent drops of more than 1.6%, according to the report. Other averages from across West Texas include $972 in Lubbock, $790 in El Paso, and $757 in Amarillo. Across the nation, Rent Cafe reports an average apartment rent of $1,468 in February, up $46 since last year, according to apartment data from Yardi Matrix. The following are February rents and month-over-month percentage growth from around the state and nation, according to Rent Cafe's blog. Largest month-over-month drops across the nation, Midland 10.3%, Odessa 7%, Providence, Rhode Island 1.6%, Sugar Land 1.4%, Hollywood, Florida 1.3%, Santa Maria, California 0.9%, Baton Rouge, Louisiana, 0.1%. This article is entitled USGS, 10th Quake in 3 Days Recorded Near Mentone, from Staff Reports. A magnitude 3.6 earthquake struck west of Mentone on Saturday night, according to the U.S. Geological Survey. The quake was the 10th in 3 days, according to EarthquakeTrack.com, which also reported Sunday that there have been 12 in the last 7 days. Mentone is located about 22 miles north of Pecos. The earthquake took place around 21 miles west of the town at a depth of 3.1 miles. The Saturday evening quake followed 5 on Thursday, including a magnitude 5.0 earthquake, and 4 on Friday. A quake with a magnitude of 2.5 to 5.4 is, quote, often felt but only causes minor damage, unquote, according to UPSIAS, an educational site for seismologists. There are about 30,000 quakes each year, according to the site. The 115 earthquakes near Mentone during the last 365 days trail the 528 that have taken place near the Medford, Oklahoma area, where a 3.4 magnitude quake happened Sunday.
Hello, I'm Jesse. I'm reading from the Odessa American for Monday, March 30th. Hector County cases up to 3. Landgraf urges labs to follow state reporting guidelines. Hector County COVID-19 confirmed positive cases numbered 3 on Sunday, with 43 tests pending results and 26 confirmed negative. That is up from 1 positive on Saturday. Among the pending cases are those of 2 Hector County Sheriff's deputies who were tested Friday. The Hector County Health Department was notified Sunday morning of 2 new confirmed cases, a husband and wife in their 60s, and there is no word at this time on where the couple is believed to have contracted the virus. The man is an inpatient at a local hospital in Odessa, while the woman is self-isolating at home. A news release from the department on Sunday indicated the department is conducting epidemiological investigations to quickly identify close contacts of the confirmed cases. As the global pandemic sweeps the United States, Mayor David Turner on Saturday said his mother is ill and had been tested for the virus. He also said he will issue some type of shelter in place that will close more businesses this week. City parks were closed on Friday. Also on Saturday, the Hector County Emergency Management Agency posted on Facebook that they would transition from a physical facility to a virtual facility due to a potential exposure. No one detailed if that potential exposure was through the mayor. A bit of a struggle continues between county and city offices as information from County Judge Debbie Haynes remains difficult to come by. By statute, county judges are in charge when disaster emergency declarations are in place. At issue for many Odessans is what appears to be difficulty qualifying to get a test for COVID-19. Many have posted on the OA's Facebook page and called to complain about not being allowed to have a test. County officials have said they are giving tests in accordance with CDC guidelines. Midland has done more testing than Odessa. Midland has, as of Sunday afternoon, 13 confirmed cases, with about 245 being tested. One issue for Hector County's testing numbers could be that private labs are doing screenings and are required to report to the state and to the county, but have not been reporting to the county. State Representative Brooks Landgraf began calling labs and state officials seeking to straighten out the numbers for worried Odessans. He was asked by Hayes to help with the reporting from private labs of COVID-19 cases originating in Hector County. He shared its report to Hayes on Saturday. The report indicates that Landgraf reached out to the largest labs in Odessa and is waiting to hear back from one. Following those conversations, he also contacted officials in the governor's office and the Texas Department of State Health Services. Quote, "In my discussions with the private labs, I can see why there are some issues with reporting test results to the Ector County Health Department," Landgraf wrote. He said prior to Governor Abbott's March 24th executive order, private labs were only required to report their COVID-19 lab results to DSHS and not to local health departments. Quote, "As a result, the labs apparently are not accustomed to reporting test results to local health departments. And it seems, with the governor's executive order being so recently issued, the directive to report test results to both DSHS and local health departments has not been widely implemented. In fact, in one case, the lab director was not even aware of the new executive order. I have emailed the governor's March 24th executive order to that lab director and encouraged compliance with it," end quote. Landgraf also asked DSHS officials to report the test results it received from private labs back to the county of origin. The DSHS official indicated that they would do so, but that there is a lag time due to high volumes across the state and the fact that many of the testing forms received from private labs have to be completed with information that was omitted by the patient, the provider, and/or the lab. As a result, it may take several days for those reports to make it back to the county. He also asked the DSHS state officials to have the DSHS regional office contact the Ector County Health Department to open up a line of communication, serve as resource, and to facilitate COVID-19 test results reporting to the Ector County Health Department from DSHS and private labs. Quote, "DSHS was very willing to grant their request," he wrote. Landgraf also recommended that the Ector County Health Department issue a memorandum to all physicians and providers in the county who are involved with collecting samples from potential COVID-19 patients. He said the memo should strongly encourage those physicians, providers to, in collaboration with the patient and the lab, fill out the testing form in its entirety so that omitted information doesn't have to be subsequently acquired and provided by DSHS. Request that the lab performing the test report the test results, positive or negative, directly to the Ector County Health Department in addition to DSHS. Report any test results, positive or negative, immediately to the Ector County Health Department that have already been received from a private lab. Stay home, West Texas, a message from one of our frontline providers. This was written by Rohit Saravanan, MD, Chief Medical Officer, Odessa Regional Medical Center. First of all, we at ORMC want to extend our sincere gratitude and support to all the healthcare workers in the Permian Basin and around the world who are doing their best caring for us through this COVID pandemic. We find ourselves facing this novel virus with little known information, not enough personal protective equipment, changing protocols every single day, and no clear prediction of how fast and furiously it will affect our community. Your hospitals and your health department have been working closely together to prepare and keep you informed. Without these partnerships with each other and with public health and the CDC, we could not have made it this far, and we will not get much further. All of us in this field of medicine and the public health community are unified in our efforts and agree with this course of action. This virus is unforgiving. It spreads before you even know you've caught it, and it tricks you into believing that it's nothing more than a little influenza. For many of us, it may be just a little flu, so it can be very confusing when schools are closed, restaurants are closed, and now this virus is taking what's left of our precious liberty. The real problem is not the 80-plus percent who will get over this in a week. It's the smaller percent of patients, the older, those who are immunocompromised, and those who have other medical problems who are going to need a bit more support, some oxygen, and even a ventilator and life support. We do amazing things like this to save patients in our hospitals and across the world every single day, but we can't take care of everyone at once. Our healthcare system doesn't have much slack. There are no empty wards waiting for patients or nurses waiting in the wings. PPE supplies are limited, and there is no clear indication when we can expect more. Things are already tough at some hospitals across the country. There is no vaccine or readily available antiviral to help stem the tide. All we have to fight this infection as a community is social distancing. If we let every patient with this infection infect three more people, and then each of them infects three people, we will easily overwhelm the healthcare system we have in place. So, in my house, we've made a lot of sacrifices. We don't go out anymore, except for groceries or medications. This isn't the life any of us expected, and certainly there are others who will make much greater sacrifices, and there are more than a few disappointments to come. But this isn't forever. It will last longer than any of us wants it to, and we have to remember that. The numbers we see today in the news are the people who got sick a week ago. And there are so many people who got sick today who don't know they are sick yet. They picked up the virus, and it will take a week or two to show in our numbers. Waiting for hospitals to be overwhelmed will leave the following week's patients with nowhere to go. In short, without taking drastic measures, we cannot contain this spread. We need to fight this fire before it grows too high. But these restrictions may seem, in the end, a little extreme because it's really hard to feel like you're saving the world when you're watching Netflix on your couch. But if we do this right, nothing happens. Yes, a successful containment means that you will feel like it was all for nothing. And you would be right, because nothing means that nothing happened to your family, and that's what we were going for here. Even starting now, we can't stop the cases from coming fast and furious, at least in the next couple of weeks. But with a real commitment to staying home and a whole lot of patience, we can help to protect our critical workers who will be taking care of us if we get sick. We can give our factories time to ramp up their production of all that PPE so that we have enough masks to last. We can make more medications and learn more about how we can use them to help save more lives. It will take more than a couple of weeks to start seeing the rate being controlled, so please don't give up. I know we will get through this together and find a way back to the life that we used to live. FAQs. What is COVID-19? COVID-19 is the short name for Coronavirus Disease 2019. It is a new virus. Recently, this virus has made a lot of people sick. Scientists and doctors are still learning about this virus, but think that most people will be okay, especially kids. Some people might get pretty sick and need to go to the hospital. Doctors and health experts are working hard to help people stay healthy. What can I do so that I don't get COVID-19? You can practice healthy habits to help protect against the spread of COVID-19. Cough or sneeze into a tissue or your elbow. If you sneeze or cough into a tissue, throw it in the trash right away. Keep your hands out of your mouth, nose, and eyes. This will help keep germs out of your body. Wash your hands with soap and water for at least 20 seconds. you can sing the Happy Birthday song twice. If you don't have soap and water, you can use an alcohol-based hand sanitizer. Keep things clean. Use sanitizing wipes to clean the things we touch the most, like desks, doorknobs, light switches, and remote controls. If you feel sick, stay home. What happens if we get sick with COVID-19? COVID-19 can look different in different people. For many people, being sick with COVID-19 would be a little bit like having the flu. People could get a fever, cough, or have a hard time taking deep breaths. Most people who have gotten COVID-19 have not gotten very sick. Only a small group of people who get it have had more serious problems, needing hospitalization. From what doctors have seen so far, most children don't seem to get very sick. While a lot of adults get sick, most adults get better. If you do get sick, it doesn't mean you have COVID-19. People can get sick from all kinds of germs. What's important to remember is that if you do get sick, there are things you can do to get better. How do we treat COVID-19? Most people who get sick with COVID-19 will have only mild illness and should recover at home. Drink a lot of fluids to stay hydrated and rest at home. Over-the-counter medicines may help with symptoms. For most people, symptoms last a few days and get better after a week. Monitor yourself for worsening symptoms. Know the emergency warning signs: trouble breathing, persistent pain or pressure in the chest, new confusion or inability to arouse, bluish lips or face. What can I do to help the community? Stay home as much as possible. Call to check on your neighbors, friends, and loved ones, especially the frail and elderly. Offer to help those working in essential job functions. Order them food or groceries. Do not visit in person. Donate unused masks to your local hospital. Call them first. If you have sewing skills, consider making CDC-compliant surgical masks for facilities in need. Compliant means that they are two layers of 100% cotton. You can find more details online. What are some other things to consider? Remember that viruses can make anyone sick, regardless of a person's race or ethnicity. Avoid making assumptions about who might have COVID-19. Consider reducing the amount of screen time focused on COVID-19. Too much information on one topic can lead to anxiety. Some stories on COVID-19 on the internet and social media may be based on rumors and inaccurate information. Try to stay away from people who are coughing or sneezing or sick. Get into a hand-washing habit. Stay home as much as possible. Where can I get more information? The most reliable source of information we have right now in this country for COVID-19 is the CDC's website, cdc.gov.
Man charged with threatening another person with handgun. A 36-year-old man was arrested after he reportedly threatened another person with a handgun. Jackson Lee McMillian was charged with burglary of a habitation with intent to commit another felony, a first-degree felony, evading arrest with previous convictions, state jail felony, and for a failure to appear warrant. The reported burglary happened at 6:35 p.m. Wednesday in the 3200 block of Chestnut Avenue, an OPD press release stated. Officers reportedly made contact with the complainant, who stated a known person, identified as McMillian, had made forced entry into their residence and threatened them with a gun. Investigation showed McMillian fled the scene before officers arrived, the press release stated. there were no reports of any injuries. An arrest warrant and search warrant were obtained, and the firearm used by McMillian was later located. At 10:33 a.m. Thursday, OPD located McMillian in the 3200 block of Chestnut Avenue, and he evaded officers south in the east alley of Chestnut Avenue. He was eventually caught and placed into custody in the 2700 block of Colonial Drive. McMillian was arrested, charged, and transported to the Ector County Law Enforcement Center. He has one bond set at $5,000, and bonds haven't been set on his burglary of a habitation with intent to commit another felony and evading arrest with previous convictions charges, jail records show.
Here are some death notices that appeared in the Odessa American on Monday, March 30th. Abundio Amaya Fuentes, age 79, of Pecos, died Saturday, March 28th, in Odessa. Services will be scheduled at a later date. Arrangements are by Acres West Funeral Chapel of Odessa. Johnny Lee Storrs, age 81, died Sunday, March 29th, in Odessa. Services are pending with Sunset Memorial Gardens and Funeral Home of Odessa. Firmin Vasquez Jr., age 83, of Odessa, died Friday, March 27th, in Odessa. Mass will be celebrated at 1 p.m. on Tuesday, March 31st, at Holy Redeemer Catholic Church. Burial will follow at Ector County Cemetery. Father Fernando Bonilla is officiating. Arrangements are by Martinez Funeral Home and Crematory of Odessa.
Hi, this is Jack. I'm reading the Midland Reporter Telegram for Sunday, March 29th, 2020, Section A. Pioneer CEO. Super majors prefer independence, go bankrupt. By Stuart Doreen. S-D-O-R-E-E-N at HearstNP.com. Pioneer Natural Resources CEO Scott Sheffield said Thursday that the current price downturn reminds him of 1986 and opposition to a settlement with the Saudis from companies like ExxonMobil threaten the future existence of independent companies. Speaking to CNBC, Sheffield said it will take a long time to balance the market and that Exxon is an example of the oil industry heavyweights that want to see all the independents go bankrupt and then pick up the scraps. When asked about the conflict between the big supermajors and the mid and small companies, Sheffield added, "What happens? As you know, there's about 74 public independents. There's only going to be about 10 left at the end of 2021 that have decent balance sheets. The rest become ghosts or zombies. Essentially, we're going to have about 65 public independents that are going to have to debt to cash flow or debt to EBITDA at about 5-1. And you haven't asked me about consolidation. Consolidation won't happen because too many companies have too much debt." Sheffield also said that joining Exxon in its opposition to a settlement is the American Petroleum Institute and the Texas Oil and Gas Association. Sheffield said Exxon controls API and TXOGA. City. Last time airport felt like this was 9/11. By Stuart Doreen, S-D-O-R-E-E-N at HearstNP.com. The past couple of weeks have not been an easy period for the City of Midland Airport's department. Things are significantly slower at Midland International Airport, Justine Ruff, Director of Airports, said Monday. She said that while numbers for March won't be known until the middle of April, load factors have appeared to move from 70% to 20-30% since airport service in Midland was hit by the coronavirus pandemic and the steep drop in the price of oil. Ruff said it remains to be seen if the three airlines using Midland International Airport, Southwest, American Eagle, and United, will pull flights from Midland International. Ruff said it is possible that if an airline doesn't have enough passengers for a particular flight, they will be moved, or at least have the option, to a flight later in the day. The last time it felt like this was 9/11, Ruff said. She said there are differences between now and 2001. First, it is unknown what the situation will be moving forward. Second, she said after 9/11, people were ready to start flying again so they could do business face-to-face. She said it will be interesting to see if the forced push to do business online will develop new routines and waves of doing business, especially with the younger generations that prefer to do things online. No one knows when this is going to end, Ruff said. The February report at Midland International showed year-over-year growth. Year-to-date, the number of passengers flying out had reached 264,207, a 7.7% increase over 2018-19. Parking revenues also were up year-over-year, reaching $1.849 million 5 months into the fiscal year. We were on course to have one of the busiest years in the history of the airport, Ruff said. Clearly, that will not happen. The silver linings in the latest downturn and drop in usage appear to be twofold. First, parking spots are now available in Midland International lots. Ruff said there are still around 300 vehicles randomly parked in overflow areas, but she said there were 942 vehicles parked at the airport Monday morning, when usually there are about 1,500 or 1,600 vehicles. Also, rental cars are available for those who need them. The other bright spot is that while the city will take hits when it comes to parking and passenger facility charge, PFC, revenue, recent improvements, such as the parking expansion, were paid for in full with cash from reserves. Ruff said that about $13 million already has been spent for improvements that include the construction of two extra lots.
Hello, this is April reading the Midland Reporter Telegram for Sunday, March 29, 2020. Viewpoints. Please stay home. Physicians, Peyton, appear to agree this is serious. By Stuart Doreen. S. Doreen at HearstNP.com. It's not every day you hear an elected official use the phrase, has haunted me, in their discussion with the media. It's also not every day that the elected official, less than 3 months into the job, is dealt a hand that impacts a community as much as the coronavirus pandemic. But Midland Mayor Patrick Peyton said, haunted is exactly the feeling that confronted him when hearing a very blunt question from a healthcare professional. It made such an impact that he added it to the script at a unified command team press conference last week. I want to continue on a bit of a sobering note and just relate to you a question that was asked to me by a healthcare professional. And it's a question that has haunted me, Peyton said. The question was, how many people have to get sick and die before we take this seriously? A conversation has taken place in the community over the last week between inspired physicians and Peyton. 1 week ago, more than 50-plus doctors offered their take where they believed the mayor's disaster declaration could have done more to protect residents. This week, a group of more than 80 physicians under the branding Protect Our Frontline, West Texas healthcare workers battling COVID-19 are speaking out again, not so much to government officials, but more to Midland residents. An opinion piece in today's Viewpoint section offers the following. As a group of local concerned physicians, physician assistants, nurse practitioners, nurses, paramedics, firefighters, respiratory therapists, and other healthcare workers, we implore you to stay at home. Please be more aggressive in your social distancing to decrease transmission of COVID-19 in West Texas. Do not wait on these directions from governments. Please listen to those of us who take care of you and will take care of you when and if you get sick. Instructions include the social distancing we have heard before, staying 6 feet away from others in public settings, sending only one family member to the store at one time, not gathering with anyone other than your immediate family, and going to the emergency room only for life-threatening emergencies. We have sat down and talked about things we can do, Peyton said about the Protect the Frontline group. We've talked about how we can meet between the things that we're trying to do and the things we're trying to accomplish. And so it's been a very productive conversation. I appreciate that they really helped us get the message out there as well. Peyton's directions for Midland has evolved around 2 points. First, personal responsibility, not bigger government, will get residents through the pandemic. With the least amount of impact. Second, those communities that have put in place shelter-in-place policies that have so many exceptions that they are no better than Governor Greg Abbott's executive order from 2 weeks ago are no better than where Midland is right now. Other factors that play into what restrictions are best for community safety include enforceability and the costs more restrictions would have on businesses already hammered by some of the lowest oil prices in more than a decade, and a health crisis unlike any seen in about a century. But it seems the constant message from physicians and Peyton alike revolves around importance and, frankly, the requirement of doing the right thing. The reality is, no matter what we do at the government level, whether it is local, it's municipal, it's federal, or state, we as citizens, as free citizens, as County Judge Terry Johnson said, you cherish our freedom and our liberty, are actually not using our freedom well if we are not looking at the bigger picture and serving each other by staying home, staying in place, taking care of yourself and not being where you do not have to be. So I'm asking all of us, how sick do people have to get? How many deaths do we have before we all decide, yes, this is serious, and it will be less serious here than it has in the rest of the country if we will practice the self-sacrifice to stay where we need to stay, which is staying at home and not getting out and being in places that are unnecessary. Commentary. Trump should put tariff on oil imported from Saudi Arabia. Boycott Saudi oil and their gasoline sold in Texas. By Kirk Edwards, oil producer. The recent actions by Saudi Arabia to flood the world oil markets at extremely low prices is bringing the American oil and gas industry to a screeching halt. Ironically, some 1 million, that's right, 1 million barrels per day of oil are being imported into the United States right now from Saudi Arabia. The largest refinery in Texas, and fifth largest in the world, located in Port Arthur, is now owned by Saudi Arabia. Shell sold control of the refinery to the Saudis in 2017. Today, 650,000 plus barrels of the 1 million per day imported from Saudi Arabia goes into their 100% Saudi-owned Motiva refinery in Port Arthur, according to online reports. None of the gasoline produced from this refinery is made from American oil. It is 100% Saudi-derived. Saudi Arabia sells this gasoline mainly through its Shell and some through its 76-branded Motiva-supplied service stations in South Texas and all across the Gulf and East Coast. No American would want to support a country that is purposefully doing its best to gut our American energy industry. I don't believe the average American has any idea when they purchase gas at a Motiva-supplied gas station that gasoline and its profits are 100% Saudi. The inside store sales are different. They are and should be supported, as they are independent contractors in most cases. I do believe, though, we should educate the American consumer and ask them to know who is making a profit when they fill up their car. It's more important than ever for Americans to support U.S. companies, especially in the wake of the COVID-19 virus outbreak. Our Permian Basin producers and workers here in the Midland-Odessa area of West Texas are proud people. We don't want government handouts. We do want government to stand up for us when our oil and gas industry is being undermined by the Saudis dumping oil into the United States at below market prices in an effort to ruin our domestic economy. Our government doesn't allow China to dump steel. They would not allow China or any other country to dump excess corn or beef at below market prices to kill an industry, so why are they not stepping in today? I ask President Trump to immediately place a $40 per barrel tariff on Saudi oil coming into the United States. I ask the President to quit defending Saudi Arabia with our troops and aircraft carriers and start defending your most critical domestic industry, the one that keeps this country moving with affordable gasoline and electricity. The $40 tariff is the difference in price American energy producers were getting just 2 months ago versus the $20 per barrel we are getting this week. That tariff would generate nearly $1.25 billion per month to the federal government. The government can then direct that revenue back to the oil-producing states like Texas, Louisiana, New Mexico, and Oklahoma in an effort to help those states that are being massively impaired by the current dumping of Saudi Arabia. Filling the Strategic Petroleum Reserve with $20 oil does nothing for the American energy producer. We need jobs, and we need a price we can economically drill for, and $20 per barrel certainly isn't it. President Trump, we need help in our industry now. South Texans and our friends on the Gulf and East Coast who fill up your car, we need your help now. Shop at Texaco, Chevron, Valero, or Sunoco, companies that use American oil refined into American gasoline. Let's send a message to the Saudis that we will not just sit back and take this. Please help us retain at least part of the American oil and gas industry before it's too late. Even in the midst of the stressful virus that is shutting down businesses, Americans are comfortable knowing they can heat and air condition their homes and drive their cars with affordable and plentiful American oil and natural gas. We've worked very hard as a country to become energy independent. Let's not let the current oil price wars drive us out of business and return us to the days where we are dependent on foreign oil and gas to fuel our economy. Individuals can choose to buy American oil and gas, and our government can choose to use tariffs to level the playing field and keep our oil and gas industry at work. Kirk Edwards is an Odessa-based independent oil and gas producer.
Hi, this is Jack. I'm reading the Midland Reporter Telegram for Sunday, March 29th, 2020. Commentary by Dr. Lyden C. Odukwu, Midland physician. Coronavirus can be defeated by repeated testing. Like most people, I have watched helplessly as the COVID-19 virus has ravaged regions of the world. It inevitably reached the U.S. and is now in our community. This is truly a war against an invisible enemy that is very smart, vicious, and unforgiving, and is on the offensive, leaving in its path death and economic destruction. The virus is winning. Our leaders and policymakers are playing into the hands of the virus, acting out in fear, reactive, divided and focused on the problem rather than on the treatment. Shutting everything down, staying at home, and an economic stimulus, although well-intended, will not defeat this virus, but will lead to certain economic destruction and prolong the menace of the virus. The virus is evolving and adapting, and asymptomatic people are spreading it, as Senator Paul Rand found out. When we choose between physical death or economic death, the virus wins. The way to beat this virus is to go after it, search it out, identify it, and eliminate it quickly. We need our leaders to redirect their efforts. All we are doing now is playing defense, but it is not a winning strategy. A rapid 10-minute test for COVID-19 needs to be mass-produced now. Our government should be mobilized biotech companies in wartime mode to produce the test by the millions every day and remove CDC restrictions and allow testing for the asymptomatic person as well as the sick. As soon as tests are available, open up the economy and let people return to work and their daily lives and test, test, and test again at mall entrances, schools, churches, workplaces, every day, and revive the economy by isolating the virus, by quarantining the positive, and treating the sick. This virus is smart, but we can be smarter. Otherwise, we are all sitting ducks, waiting to be infected while the economy collapses. Ask yourself who benefits from all this. How hard can it be to make a rapid test kit? You can help. Call your congressman to make test kits freely available now. This virus can be eliminated quickly. It was done in a short time in South Korea. It can be done here.
Obituaries. Amy Chase LaBombard. Amy Chase LaBombard, born July 27, 1939, died March 24, 2020. Born and raised in Old Forge, New York, married to Donnie Don LaBombard, July 4, 1957. Amy and Don had four boys together, David, Doug, Brian, and Lloyd. Her life was dedicated to raising her boys right. Amy worked for General Telephone Company as an operator in her early years. In her free time, she loved to camp, travel, and be around children. Grand and great-grandchildren were her life, and every child she came in contact with, she loved dearly and put a smile on her face. Amy was a member of both St. Paul's UMC and Grace Presbyterian in Midland. Amy was also a member of the Daughters of the American Revolution. By Amy's choice, it was arranged for her to be a direct Barry with no viewing or services. Pallbearers included Lloyd, Dave, Britton, and Doug LaBombard, Mike Cullum, and Ron Brewer. Doyle Pipkin Parker. Doyle Pipkin Parker, 86, of Midland, died on Saturday, March 14, 2020, at home in the company of his family. He was born on August 23, 1933, in Roby, Texas, to Maybelle and Fred Parker. Doyle graduated from Texas Tech University with a degree in business and made his living as a salesman. He peddled everything from pharmaceuticals and Cadillacs to eyeglasses and logging mud in a career of nearly five decades. Doyle enjoyed a number of hobbies, including gardening and bird watching, but the many friends who knew him well knew him best as a storyteller. He was just as apt to spin an embellished yarn of today's trip to the HEB as a nostalgic saga of his zany school exploits with great good friends gone by. Doyle was preceded in death by Sherry, his wife and steadfast companion of 56 years, by only 4 months. They are survived by their daughter, Hillary Crawford of Midland, her husband, Jay, and their daughter, Madison, and their daughter, Paige Parker of Las Cruces, New Mexico, and her wife, Betsy Ingett. Hillary and Paige and their families are deeply grateful to Hospice of Midland and respectfully request that in lieu of flowers, donations in Doyle Parker's name be made to that outstanding organization at 911 West Texas Avenue, Midland, Texas, 79701. Arrangements are under the direction of Nellie Pickle and Welch Funeral Home and Crematory of Midland. Online condolences may be made at www.npwelch.com. Paul David Hughes. Paul David Hughes was a lover of life, ceaselessly pursuing his love of gaining and sharing knowledge, endless reading, Bible study, storytelling, Gaither gospel music, woodworking, artistry, but most of all, Paul loved the Lord and his family. In the past several years, it was apparent to all that knew him, his theme in life became sharing unconditional love and God's grace. Paul was born December 10, 1950, and as of March 26, 2020, he woke up from a peaceful night's sleep, standing face to face with his Heavenly Father. His wife, Debbie Hughes, daughter Reagan Harper, and husband, Trey Harper, grandchildren, David, Rachel, Isaac, Ada, daughter Sarah Hughes, and granddaughter Ava Gray, his sister Laura McWright, his brother Lloyd Gale Hughes, mother-in-law Patricia Delameter, Will Gray, Gary McWright, all of his nieces and nephews and their families, his extended Midland Odessa family and beyond, and a multitude of friends will forever live with his memory. He was preceded in death by his beloved parents, L.G. and Virginia Hughes of Midland. A private graveside service for the family will be held at American Heritage Cemetery this Tuesday at 10 a.m. A celebration service is to follow once the current gathering restrictions are lifted. In lieu of flowers, please send memorials to Christ Church Anglican, Home Hospice, www.homehospicewtx.com, as well as St. Joseph's Home Health of Midland, Texas. Arrangements by American Heritage Cemetery Funeral Home Crematory.
We've been reading from the Midland Reporter Telegram and the Odessa American. Please stay tuned for the weather, followed by the second hour's reading of the newspapers.